But what if I am just an average accountant? I went to a state university. I had a B-plus average. Eventually, I got my CPA. I work in a big accounting firm doing a lot of standard work. I rarely meet with clients. They keep me in the back. But it is a decent living, and the firm is basically happy with me. What is going to happen to me in this system?
It is a good question, said Jerry. We must be honest about it. We are in the middle of a big technological change. And when you live in a society that is at the cutting edge of that change, like America, it is hard to predict. It's easy to predict for someone living in India. In 10 years, we are going to be doing a lot of the stuff that is being done in America today. We can predict our future. But we are behind you. You are defining the future. America is always on the edge of the next creative wave. So it is difficult to look into the eyes of that accountant and say this is what is going to be. Any activity where we can digitize and decompose the value chain and move the work around will get moved around. Some people will say, yes, but you can't serve me a steak. True, but I can take the reservation for your table sitting anywhere in the world if the restaurant does not have an operator. We can say, yes, Mr. Friedman, we can give you a table by the window. In other words, there are parts of the whole dining out experience that we can decompose and outsource. If you go back and read the basic economics textbooks, they will tell you, goods are traded, but services are consumed and produced in the same place. And you cannot export a haircut. But we are coming close to exporting a haircut, the appointment part. What kind of haircut do you want? Which barber do you want? All those things can and will be done by a call center far away. Unlike Columbus, I didn't stop with India. By the summer of 2004, I was in Colorado on vacation. I had heard about this new low-fare airline called JetBlue, which was launched in 1999. I had heard that JetBlue had outsourced its entire reservation system to housewives in Utah, and I wanted to check this out. So I dialed JetBlue reservations and had the following conversation with the agent.
Hello, this is Dolly. Can I help you?
Yes, I would like to fly from Washington to Atlanta, I said. Do you fly that route?
No, I'm sorry, we don't. We fly from Washington to Fort Lauderdale, said Dolly.
Say, can I ask you something? Are you really at home? I read that JetBlue agents just work at home.
Yes, I am.
I am sitting in my office upstairs in my house, looking out the window at a beautiful sunny day.
Where do you live? I asked.
Salt Lake City, Utah, said Dolly. We have a 2-story home, and I love working here, especially in the winter when the snow is swirling and I am up here in the office at home.
David Neeleman, the founder and CEO of JetBlue Airways Corp., has a name for all this. He calls it home sourcing. A few months later, I visited Neeleman at JetBlue's headquarters in New York, and he explained to me the virtues of home sourcing, which he actually started at Morris Air, his first venture in the airline business. It was bought by Southwest. We had 250 people in their homes doing reservations at Morris Air, said Neeleman. They were 30% more productive. They take 30% more bookings by just being happier. They were more loyal, and there was less attrition. So when I started JetBlue, I said, we are going to have 100% reservation at home. Neeleman has a personal reason for wanting to do this. He is a Mormon and believes that society will be better off if more mothers are able to stay at home with their young children but are given a chance to be wage earners at the same time. So he based his home reservation system in Salt Lake City, where the vast majority of the women are Mormons, and many are stay-at-home mothers.
We will never outsource to India, said Neeleman. The quality we can get here is far superior. Employers are more willing to outsource to India than to their own homes, and I can't understand that. Somehow, they think that people need to be sitting in front of them or some boss they have designated. The productivity we get here more than makes up for the India wage factor. A Los Angeles Times story about JetBlue, May 9, 2004, noted that in 1997, 11.6 million employees of U.S. companies worked from home at least part of the time. Today, that number has soared to 23.5 million, 16% of the American labor force. In some eyes, home sourcing and outsourcing aren't so much competing strategies as they are different manifestations of the same thing, a relentless push by corporate America to lower costs and increase efficiency, wherever that may lead. That is exactly what I was learning on my own travels. Home sourcing to Salt Lake City and outsourcing to Bangalore were just flip sides of the same coin, sourcing. And the new thing I was also learning is the degree to which it is now possible for companies and individuals to source work anywhere. On October 3, 2004, I appeared on the CBS News Sunday morning show Face the Nation, hosted by veteran CBS correspondent Bob Schieffer. After the show that Sunday, Schieffer mentioned that the oddest thing had happened to him the week before. When he walked out of the CBS studio, a young reporter was waiting for him on the sidewalk. He politely introduced himself as a reporter for a website called NDC Journal and asked whether he could ask Schieffer a few questions. Schieffer, being a polite fellow, said, sure. The young man interviewed him on a device Schieffer did not recognize and then asked if he could take his picture. A picture? Schieffer noticed that the young man had no camera. He turned his cell phone around and snapped Schieffer's picture. So I came in the next morning and looked up this website, and there was my picture and the interview, and there were already 300 comments about it, said Schieffer, who, though keenly aware of online journalism, was nevertheless taken aback at the incredibly fast, low-cost, and solo manner in which this young man had put him up in lights. I was intrigued by this story, so I tracked down the young man from NDC Journal. His name is Bill Ardolino, and he is a very thoughtful guy. I conducted my own interview with him online, how else, and began by asking about what equipment he was using as a one-man network/newspaper. I used a minuscule MP3 player/digital recorder, 3.5 inches by 2 inches, to get the recording, and a separate small digital camera phone to snap his picture, said Ardolino. Not quite as sexy as an all-in-one phone/camera/recorder, which does exist, but a statement on the ubiquity and miniaturization of technology nonetheless. I carry this equipment around DC at all times because, hey, you never know. I offer the Schieffer-Ardolino encounter as just one example of how the flattening of the world has happened faster and changed rules, roles, and relationships more quickly than we could have imagined. And though I know it is a cliche, I have to say it nevertheless. You ain't seen nothing yet. As I detail in the next chapter, we are entering a phase where we are going to see the digitization, virtualization, and automation of almost everything. The gains in productivity will be staggering for those countries, companies, and individuals who can absorb the new technological tools. And we are entering a phase where more people than ever before in the history of the world are going to have access to these tools, as innovators, as collaborators, and, alas, even as terrorists. You say you want a revolution? Well, the real information revolution is about to begin.